This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, we see if there's reason to celebrate our nation's public schools and, now that the Voting Rights Act has been renewed, what next? Joining us today to discuss these topics at our Washington, D.C. headquarters, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. From Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi Carr. Jeff hosts the radio show Freestyle and at NPR's Chicago Bureau, Roland Martin. He's executive editor of the Chicago Defender and host of the Roland S. Martin Show for WVON Radio. So welcome, guys. And I want to start out with something that it is, to me, fascinating, not just in its content, but also in the reaction to it. There's a new study by the Education Department that reported on Friday that children in public schools generally performed as well or better in reading and math than comparable children in private schools. And the only exception was in eighth grade reading, where the private school counterparts fared better. So, Jeff, I guess I'll start with you. Are you surprised by these findings?
Well, I'm absolutely not surprised. It just makes me reflect back to a couple of weeks ago when I was invited out to several private schools to lecture on the nature of my writing and the plays that I've written and how they can become involved in those things. And I just kind of had to giggle to myself. And I said, here's a public school kid from South Nashville who's being brought to teach these private school kids. So I've always known that public education is comparable, in some cases better, than private school education because it depends on the teachers and the focus that's there. I think this report is going to shed some new light on people's perceptions out there, especially on the conservative right, that private schools are much better for our children.
Dr. Berry, I just want to read a quote to you from one of the articles on this. A spokesman for the Education Department, Chad Colby, offered no praise for public schools and said he did not expect the findings to influence policy. He emphasized the caveat, an overall comparison of the two types of schools is of modest utility. We're not just for public schools or private schools. We're for good schools. Now, that speaks directly to what Jeff was just saying about a political agenda. How politicized has this issue of public versus private gotten?
Well, the whole thing is politicized. First of all, I'm sure the Education Department was blindsided by this report coming from the National Center for Education Statistics, which I know very well from when I used to run federal education programs in some time past. They are a bunch of statisticians and researchers who are career people, and they put this together. And I think the department probably hoped it was going to come out and show that private schools are better because that's their policy agenda. And then when it didn't show that, they decided to bury it and send it out on trash day in the press so nobody would notice it, but it got noticed. And then they, of course, didn't have a press conference or anything to embrace it. But the bottom line is that the policy of the administration to support private school choice is not going to change. Also, contrary to what Jeff said, I think that conservatives who believe in Christian schools and who believe in fundamentalist schools and all that, whether or not the schools are any good, they still will be saying that they're good because, you know, the parents choose them and that this is what we want. Also, there are many, many, many public schools that are very good. There are many that are crappy, and we know where they are. Usually poor kids and kids of color who are poor are the ones who end up, and poor whites go to them. So that I think public schools are as good or better, we all know this, than private schools if you put them all together en masse. But in general, schools are not doing what they should be doing for the people who need the help the most, whether they're private or public.
And Roland, you know, mentioning schools that aren't performing, I know your town, Chicago, has dealt with that. My hometown, Baltimore, has dealt with that. My new town, Los Angeles, has dealt with that. Some of America's biggest cities are the ones which have large concentrations of students of color and also have the highest numbers of teachers who don't have certification. What do you see happening in Chicago with, you know, the public schools and what they're offering the kids?
Well, first of all, you have the same thing that you have in other places. In this city, of a mayor, Richard Daley, who has taken over the schools for the last 11 years. Last week, they trumpeted test scores going up. But the fact of the matter is, only 31% of black males in Chicago public schools are going to actually graduate from high school. A study also came out about a month or two ago showing that of the students who graduate from CPS, only 22% are going to go on and earn a college degree in at least 6 years. I think the whole problem with this conversation about education, frankly, is a stupid debate. And here's what I mean by that. It should not be public versus private. It should not be public versus charter, or should not be public versus homeschool. The reality is all of these different ways to educate children are a part of the education process. I don't have an issue with private school or charter school or vouchers or public school or homeschool. The whole point is, how can our kids get an education? What works in one place may not work somewhere else. There is no one size fits all. I am a product of public schools my entire life, from elementary school all the way up through college. And so I understand that. But I think it's ridiculous for people to continue with this, well, either or, when it's all a part of the educational spectrum.
Well, let me follow up on that with you. I mean, it strikes me, and you know, Roland first, but anyone else who wants to jump in on this, that although this report is hopeful in one sense about public versus private, the statistics that you just ticked off, Roland, really show that the education system as we know it is not serving large proportions of students. So is it more a question of pedagogy? Is it more a question of maybe we're teaching totally the wrong things? Maybe the curriculum we have is dating back a century and we need to totally change what we do and give kids skills like financial literacy and computer literacy? Or is it just that the education system, pedagogy is fine, but the teaching isn't? I don't know.
First of all, it's a combination of that. We dealt with this on my radio show about 2 months ago when I had Marva Collins on the show. And we talked about teaching our kids to read, teaching them how to write, dealing with language, having them read the classics. It's a matter of, yes, what you teach them and how you teach them. The bottom line is, in Illinois, 90% of the inmates in Illinois prisons come from the Chicago public school system. CPS is a feeder system to the prisons. You other states base their prison building based upon reading stats in third and fourth grade. And so if we don't look at the entire education system, what is amazing to me is we may have something that works and we really don't want to look at that. We'll say, well, here's why that worked, here's why it can't work, as opposed to how can you roll that out?
I mean, if I could jump in here, let me just say that we already know what works with schools. We've known it for years, if you want to educate kids. We know that if they come from families where things are problematic, that that's a burden, but that there are things that the schools can do anyway. And one is that you got to have a good teacher who knows how to teach and knows what to teach and gives attention to the children and has time to give attention to them. That's what you get in good schools. You don't get that in bad schools. Teacher certification.
Yep.
We hire teachers without certification because we don't have enough of them. If you want to have good teachers who can give attention to kids and who know what to teach and who know how to teach it, you need to pay teachers more. You need to provide funding compared to other professions. What public school teachers make and private school teachers make is ridiculous. So people stay and they teach a while and then they leave if they're really good. And you also need a way to make people, attract people to teach in the schools where the kids need the attention more. So you need more teachers, better teachers, pay them better, give them more time, smaller class size. People say you don't need small class size. Yes, you do. If you go to a good school, one of the things they will have, whether it's private or public, where the kids are graduating and not going to jail, you will in fact have time for the teachers and small classes for them to get. So if we do all of these things, then the schools will work. We don't do them. What we do instead is argue about values and what they're teaching, and people should just teach anyway, and teachers, it's their fault, and they're making too much money. And
we've got to get Jeff back in here, because what you said,
chime in on that.
Dr. Barry, what you said about certification, and Jeff, I want to throw this at you. There's this other article from blackamericaweb.com that talks about how D.C.'s public school system might be lacking 750 teachers when it starts in the fall because it has all these teachers without certification. It's having to get rid of them. It gives them a certain amount of time to pass the certification test. And it's not just D.C. It's school systems all over the country that are running short on teachers. So how do you fold what Dr. Barry is saying into this picture of having qualified teachers who have the time and the intellect and the energy to take care of the kids?
Well, I think what we have to do is examine the nature of what we consider teaching in America. Teaching is not, from my perspective, a profession at all. Teaching is a calling. You want people who are called to work with your kids. And that's where the argument comes in, because you have people who seek certification and they say certification teaches you how to work with kids and it teaches you how to manage classes and how to do lesson planning and that kind of thing. But in reality, there are some people who spend time out in the real world who decide that they now feel called to teach and they want to help educate kids, and they have to get into a special program to help them transition to that. I think the question is, how do you get the highest quality people who are interested in the kids there? And that makes a difference. I wanted to throw back to another point Dr. Berry made. When I was in Montgomery, Alabama, working for a while, on almost every neighborhood, I saw private schools all over the place. And I asked one of the local leaders what that was all about. And he said, well, you realize after integration, these schools just popped up everywhere. Yeah. Here in the South, we're seeing an increase in the call for charter, private, and even home schools especially. Let's be real here, because without, even in the case of this study, statistics that back it up, what's the real impetus for the push for alternative education these days? People want their kids to go to school with and around people who share their values, act, look like them, or live with them. And we're growing away from pluralism in American education and closer toward at least some form of chosen segregation. I think the teacher certification issue puts it on the forefront. Why do you want to go and work in an inner city school, even if you're called to teach, if you have a private school that's offering you six times what you're getting paid and a plush environment with a small classroom size? These are issues that are going to continue to pop up, and it's going to be a challenge to overcome.
For Rob, right. Let me tell you something about the certified teachers on this issue. In Illinois, the Education Trust came out with a survey showing that in the poor school districts where they're teaching minority students, that's where you have the teachers with less experience or these uncertified teachers. And they documented that it was the teachers with more experience who were going to suburban school districts. And so basically, in essence, bad teachers coming to poor school districts and better teachers going to suburban school districts. And the question has been put to those leaders, okay, what are you going to do about it? Our kids are getting what has been described as the worst teachers. This is not denigrating teachers across the board, but it's based upon experience. It's based upon the ability to teach. And so you have people who are trying to pay, trying to offer bonuses. They're trying to do signing bonuses. They're trying all kind of ways to get to entice people. And so you're having bidding wars. And I'm telling you right now, the school district with high property taxes are going to always win bidding wars. As simple as that. And so even though if you base it upon money, you're still going to have the inequity.
Well, you know, I mean, you talk about teaching as a calling, and I have to say that my own mother, she turned down more money to go teach in the county because she wanted to teach in our neighborhood school. But we only have 4.5 minutes left, and I want to transition to, because we could go on about this. I love the right. topic of education, and all of you are so well-versed. But
we'll do it again, maybe.
Yes, huh? Absolutely. Well, this is actually something that connects, the Voting Rights Act, because, of course, voting statistics are linked to education statistics. The more educated you are, the more likely you are to vote. So we have the Voting Rights Act that was reauthorized last week.
No, Farai. If I may jump in here.
Please.
The Voting Rights Act has not been reauthorized. It has not been
renewed.
The
House voted to.
The House passed.
People must know that there's going to be a big fight in the Senate. It was passed in the House after much storm and drong, but it hasn't been passed by the Senate. And
do you anticipate a problem with the Senate?
Well, there are going to be some of the same arguments made against the provisions. There are going to be people from the South, some of the senators, arguing that everything's perfect there, and so they don't need any special provisions. There are going to be people arguing against the multilingual ballots because it's connected to the whole debate about immigration. So we're going to have the same issues, and so people have to be alert and make sure that they tell their senators, if they wish to have this thing reauthorized, that make sure that there'll be a battle. I think it'll pass. But the other point I wanted to make is, even when the Voting Rights Act is legal and passed and it's legal right now, we have problems with enforcement. The Justice Department, you know, didn't even object to the redistricting in Texas, even the part that the Supreme Court found illegal because it discriminated against Hispanics. This Justice Department didn't object. Right. And they didn't object to the Georgia voter ID. So part of the problem is getting it passed. We also, in a world that was perfect we would change the multilingual provisions and expand them to cover all the new immigrant groups and ethnic groups that live in America today. Haitians aren't covered. Some Dominicans aren't covered. There are a lot of European ethnic groups, people with different languages who are not covered, but we can't do that because if we start messing with it, we may not get it passed. But enforcement is a really big issue.
Let me say this on the Voting Rights Act. I think it's critically important. Black leaders, black leadership has continued to carry the ball on the Voting Rights Act. The folks who I am most upset with, and I dealt with them in my column this week, are frankly Hispanic Latino leaders. They have not been as vocal on this issue. The big fight in the House, as Mary said, had to do with those bilingual or multilingual ballots. And that has been a fundamental problem. I would hope the same folks who are marching in the street for immigration reform will recognize the Voting Rights Act also covers them. And so, again, black leadership is having to lead this fight and carry this battle in the House, in the Senate, to force the president to sign it. And again, Hispanic Latinos have been sitting on the sidelines, operating as freeloaders, doing nothing and not enough to make sure this gets passed.
Freeloaders. Jeff, is that too strong language? And we have 30 seconds for you.
30 seconds. I think it's a little too strong. I was just talking to the president of the local Hispanic Chamber of Commerce about one of these issues. And I think what's happening now is their front burner issue is trying to stay in the country right now. So they'll worry about what happens after they're able to stay here once they've secured their freedom. So
well, you better get some political power first. You better get some political power. But again, black people continue to have to do this. And this is part of this whole black-brown coalition and the whole black-brown debate. Again, that when you have laws like this, do you have folks who are truly fighting along the side? No, African-Americans are still having a care in the water, and they're not doing enough to ensure this get passed.
All right, we're going to have to end it there, Roland, because you know what? We're going to get a lot of letters on this. At NPR Chicago Bureau, Roland Martin, executive editor of the Chicago Defender and host of the Roland S. Martin Show for WVON Radio. From Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi Carr of the radio show Freestyle, and in Washington, D.C. at our headquarters, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you all.
Thanks for
Adios. Right.